From Uniontown to Lebanon, Punxsutawney to Sealands Grove, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, for the first time in 4 years, Pennsylvania has an on-time state budget. It contains more spending, but no tax hikes. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and Kevin Shivers from the National Federation of Independent Business are here with details. And state senators are advancing a plan to elect appellate court judges by district rather than in statewide elections. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania's General Assembly will not be getting smaller anytime soon. A proposal to shrink the State House of Representatives from the current 203 members to 151 members failed to make it to the floor for a vote before the legislature adjourned for a lengthy summer recess. Reducing the size of the legislature would require an amendment to the state constitution. For that to be placed on the ballot, the issue must pass 2 consecutive sessions of the General Assembly. But the 2 houses could not agree on the reduction, with the House version reducing both the size of the House and the Senate, and the Senate version just reducing the size of the House. Amid that disagreement, and with a majority of members apparently not favoring reduction, the issue was not brought to the floor for a vote. When the legislature returns in September, there will not be enough time for the issue to be placed on the November ballot, meaning the idea is dead for the time being. Supporters argue the legislature is too big and expensive. Others suggest a smaller legislature would result in larger districts, making money more important than grassroots politics. In any event, voters won't get to weigh in anytime soon. Another issue that died without action is a proposal by several Democratic front groups to change the process for redrawing congressional and legislative district lines. So-called Fair Districts PA advocated a Citizens Commission to replace the current process, which for congressional districts takes the form of a bill passed by a majority of both houses of the General Assembly and signed by the governor. Although the goal was redrawing lines supposedly without political interference, how the Citizens Commission would be composed was vague. For such a change to occur, again, that resolution had to pass both houses by July 6th to be placed on the November ballot. With the General Assembly in recess until September, that won't happen. The end result is the redrawing of district lines following the 2020 census will proceed using the same process that has been in place for decades. A lengthy study to recommend how Pennsylvania should go about implementing the death penalty was released this past week. The Task Force and Advisory Committee on Capital Punishment wants more transparency surrounding the use of the state's lethal injection protocol and guarantees that, quote, an appropriate and effective drug would be used to effect a humane execution. Other recommendations include the establishment of a taxpayer-funded defender's office and a new plea of guilty but mentally ill in death penalty cases. Governor Wolf declared a moratorium on the death penalty when he took office 3 years ago. It has remained in effect pending release of the report. No word yet on when or if executions will resume. Read about all things Pennsylvania on the all-new patownhall.com. Governor Tom Wolf did something last week he has never done before. He signed a state budget into law, and the legislature gave him that budget well before the June 30th deadline. Higher-than-expected revenue generated by the expanding Trump economy allowed for additional spending without increasing tax rates. Here with a Capitol Watch look at the good and bad in the budget are Dave Taylor and Kevin Shivers. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, my pal Kevin Shivers, Executive State Director of the National Federation of Independent Business. Kevin, thanks for being on the program.
Good to be with you again, David.
Well, and I wanted to start off just by saying, you know, we kick the issues around a lot. And, you know, and when there are folks who don't agree with us, you know, we push back pretty hard on that. But none of this is ever personal, ever. And I just wanted to start the program by sending condolences to Governor Tom Wolf that his mom passed away. The God rest her soul, that she was 94 years old. You know, what a full life. And just again, condolences to Governor Wolf and his family on the passing of his mom.
But well said.
He was on the scene and doing his job despite all that we had a very consequential week in the state capitol. That we ahead of the end of the fiscal year, we actually saw the passage of the Commonwealth's general fund budget for 2018-2019.
Yes, we did. You know, the highlights from this budget, if you've been reading about it in the newspaper at home, you know that it's, you know, spending is in line with inflation and population growth, that there's no new taxes to this budget. The disappointing part to me, David, is that, you know, when we were walking the halls of the Capitol after its passage or right around that time, everybody acknowledged, you know, this is great, a no tax budget. But there was a, you know, everybody all, you know, wait till next year was the phrase. You know, boy, we're going to have to deal with, you know, the big budget spending problems and tax issues next year. And, you know, it was disappointing because why didn't they take the time this year to resolve those problems and, you know, set Pennsylvania up for a good fiscal year next year? That, you know, otherwise it's just a political sham that there's an election coming forward and that, you know, the policymakers, elected officials didn't want to raise taxes. So we'll just wait till next year when the voters don't have a chance to take a crack at us.
Yeah. And it's there were a number of things that worked to the, you know, to cushion the blow in that with the Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that with increased economic activity, growth, and some things that encouraged bringing forward in time some economic activity, that helped to increase collections for this year. So we got some good numbers from that. But I was disappointed, Kevin, in exactly the same way. You know, last year when we were facing a shortfall, that you had members of the General Assembly, members of the House in particular, form this group called the Common Sense Caucus to focus on the inner workings of state government, to go through the books line by line and to find places where savings could be achieved or to reallocate dollars that were dormant. And they found all kinds of stuff squirreled away, you know, reserves that people were holding on to that they didn't have urgent use for or immediate use for, that they were just keeping it to keep it.
Absolutely. I mean, imagine, you know, for our listeners at home, that if you were routinely overcharged month after month after month on your light bill, and so you overpaid month after month after month on your electricity bill, and then you find out after, you know, years and years and years, there literally was an overpayment of, mm-hmm. you know, in the light bill scenario, thousands of dollars. What we're talking about is a circumstance at the state level where taxpayers have overpaid millions of dollars, in some instances tens of millions mm-hmm. of dollars
yeah.
in overpaid fees mm-hmm. in many instances, and yet we every year continue to increase spending lines, and those fees just lay dormant in those accounts. And so the Commonwealth Caucus last year, led by State Representatives Dan Mall, Seth Grove, Don Kiefer, they went about actually looking at each of these different funds
right.
and cobbled together, I mean, literally billions of dollars in money that just laying there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a shame that legislative leaders did not allow for these resources to be added into the conversation this year to maybe put that money in a rainy day fund or in the state's rainy day fund. But hopefully with the work that the Commonwealth Caucus did last year won't be in vain, and that going forward next year, you know, if they are having conversations about needing revenue, we could start there.
Listeners of this program will remember that we had State Representative Frank Ryan of Lebanon County,
yes.
Who was our legislative champion on reversing a rule that had been put in place by Governor Wolf's Department of Revenue back in December, which would have which prevented Pennsylvania businesses from having the full benefit of the Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. It created a unique competitive disadvantage for Pennsylvania because no other state in America had enacted that policy. And I'm pleased to report to the listeners that, yes, that in fact was that the General Assembly has passed the remedy to fix that rule. At the time of this recording, I believe that it's either awaiting the governor's signature or he might just let it lapse into law as he's wont to do. And even when Pennsylvania's economy is in positive territory, which is where we want it, we still continue to underperform. And so it isn't only that when America catches cold that Pennsylvania gets pneumonia, it's also in the good times that when we are moving forward, the rest of the country is moving forward faster than we are. And so we need to benchmark competitiveness and turn things around so that we do a better job of earning investment and growth and new hiring and expansion and all those kinds of positive things that we want. And the other thing that I wanted to say, and this is related to that whole thing about competitiveness, that just because Pennsylvania is better than we used to be, it doesn't mean that we've made net progress because the rest of the world isn't standing still. That yes, we've managed to fix this problem that was caused by Governor Wolf and the Department of Revenue back in December. And so it's good that we fixed it. But at the same time, this is a problem that nobody else had and that we'll never know how much we missed out on of business investment decisions that were made between the time the rule was put in place and the time we got it changed.
That is the key point right there, because literally all we did was we got back to square one. With the legislature adopting this bonus depreciation rule, we didn't make anything better. We just corrected an obscenity that was, put forth by this administration back in January. So we didn't do anything beneficial, but you're right. How much investment was not – how many pieces of equipment were not purchased because companies were looking at, boy, I'm not going to be able to take advantage of the tax benefit until I get rid of that asset. I don't want to buy a piece of equipment and have it for the next 10 or 15 or 20 years if I'm not going to be able to benefit from that. So, it was just a boneheaded move. It was completely for someone who has a business degree, who's run a business, it was very surprising that was the decision that was made. But we've, resolved it. Hopefully the governor signs it into law and then we move on.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me in the studio, Kevin Shivers from NFIB Pennsylvania. So we're here in the wake of not only the passage of the state budget in Harrisburg and the final sort of echo of the legislative session, but also some really big national news that's going to reverberate across the country, but especially here in the Commonwealth, that the U.S. Supreme Court has handed down the decision in Janus versus AFSCME, and that they have ruled that mandatory unionism violates the fundamental constitutional rights of public employees.
A huge win for American workers. The idea that you could be compelled to do something just by virtue of the fact that you exist. I mean, that ultimately was that fundamental premise here in this case that, Janus and, public employees who chose not to be part of the union but had to pay a fair share fee.
So-called
fair share fee for the luxury of enjoying the representation that they weren't getting from the public sector union. But that the Supreme Court in a 5-4 decision came back and said that violated the First Amendment speech, mm-hmm. that they're, that these workers were being forced to invest and that those dollars were going to be used for speech that they may not agree with. Mm-hmm. For my organization, David, NFIB, we just celebrated our 75th anniversary. So since 1943, every day, myself and my colleagues before me and those that I serve with today have to demonstrate value to the small business members that we have in our organization. And guess what? NFIB is a stronger organization today because our members, you know, clearly state that, you know, if they don't want to be a part of, if they don't see the value in what we do, they can just go join some other organization. And so the idea that every day we have to stand up and demonstrate that we are doing what our members want us to do makes us a better organization. You know, there's been a lot of talk that this is going to decimate public sector unions. You know what? I think this is a perfect opportunity for public sector unions, teachers and others, to actually demonstrate their value. That if you have to show the people that you work for that you're actually doing something for them, that they're getting the services that they paid for, that, you know what, why wouldn't this be a rally cry for more public sector unionism and not necessarily the end of public sector unions? That, in fact, if you have the ability to, you know, go out there and meet the wishes of your rank and file, that they should actually be stronger.
That they would want to be members. They would want to support that group by being a member and by paying dues. Yeah, I mean, it's and certainly the free speech part of it goes directly to the role that the government unions play in pushing for more spending, bigger government, and more hiring, because, of course, that's the source of the power of this private organization. And that when you're in the public sector, of course, that's yeah. what it's all about, making, you know, that it's in their interest, which is contrary to the interests of the taxpayers. And so all of those things are inherently political by their nature, which means that being compelled to join as a condition of working and for those funds to be used for in that great debate about the size yeah. and scope of government, then yeah, that all those things are very fraught. So this is a great victory for freedom of conscience, freedom of association, and that this will go across the entire United States of America, including the 22 states like Pennsylvania that do not have right to work protections.
And what is really, I think, exciting about this decision is that we could see an immediate impact in next year's budget. You know, we just talked a minute ago about, you know, the fact that we could see a huge tax increase next year. There may be other spending increases. You know, the fact that public sector unions don't have the cash to back up and to buy the influence and to push for the programs that you know they're seeking. You know, we could maybe see a public sector influence over the budget process waning next year, depending on what happens with their membership, which means that they're not going to have the same kind of political punch that they do now because of these forced union dues that they're able to use for those political yeah. purposes.
That the High Court has, in essence, deprived them of an unfair advantage. But again, the Supreme Court ruling merely creates a right.
That's right.
That people then have to go and vindicate their rights, and so this doesn't just happen automatically. The Supreme Court has set the path, but yeah. individuals are going to have to press that when it comes to achieving those freedoms.
And it was extraordinary. I think you know, organized labor had some estimates, and they believe that based on their research that immediately there are going to be 15%. Who just decide they're not going to pay those fair share fees, and then another 45% said that that's going to be something that they'll actually have to think about. Which that's extraordinary to me. That
yeah.
You know, given the opportunity of paying or not, being involved or not, that basically the biggest fear among these public sector unions is the people not want to belong.
Yes.
Well, then why don't you try and provide a product that your members want?
Yes. And this is the thing we've always said, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of association, freedom of conscience, and that unions should have to earn members the same way that businesses earn customers, one by one and all over again each day.
Amen to that.
Well, the other really big sweeping news at the end of the session of the Supreme Court is that Justice Anthony Kennedy has announced that he is retiring, and that the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky said that the U.S. Senate will vote on the confirmation of the justice who is nominated by the president, and that will happen this fall.
truly an extraordinary decision. And I mean, first off, let's give credit where credit was due. You know, Justice Kennedy, a Reagan appointee, has served admirably on the court. He has been a swing vote for a lot of years. He has been, you know, for many, he has been an independent voice, and is, you know, his 81 years old, I think. Mm-hmm. So it's a good time for him to move on and enjoy the rest of his life. But it does create an opportunity for the president, Trump, to come up with another nominee for this court. Cannot tell you how pleased, you know, my organization was with the appointment and confirmation of Justice Neil Gorsuch, who's been a tremendous jurist on the court. And so looking forward to another
We could use another one just like him. And Kevin, that's all the time we have. And in particular, that's all the time I'll ever have that you are actually moving on from NFIB, and I will not have the pleasure of having you here as my wingman on the radio program.
You know that we save the best news for last, I guess, for some of your listeners. But yeah, so for the last nearly 17 years, since mid-December of 2001, I have woken up every morning and fought for Pennsylvania small businesses and entrepreneurs. And, you know, this week I'll be turning the lights off in the office for the final time. And with that, I'm going to be giving up the golden microphone here in this office with you. And it has truly been a privilege to break bread with you and to talk about good public policy and to carry on a great conversation here in Pennsylvania. And we've been doing this now for a little over 10 years, I think,
yes,
together
sir.
With Matt Briette as well. And it really has been a privilege. So thank you.
Well, we inevitably you will have a successor, but you will never be replaced. But for those who soldier on with NFIB, where can the folks go to learn more about that organization and the things that they do?
Indeed. You can visit NFIB.com/PA, or you can join the conversation on Twitter at NFIB_PA.
And as ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org and on Sunday mornings at 8:30 on the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. So from Kevin and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. It is interesting that the same coalition of Democratic activists and mainstream media types who have been fighting for so-called fair congressional districts have lined up in opposition to a true reform that would bring electoral balance to Pennsylvania's appellate courts. Senate Republicans have advanced a plan that would change the state's current system of electing justices and judges of the state's Supreme, Superior, and Commonwealth courts to a by-district system. This would ensure all regions of the state have equal representation in the judicial branch of government. At present, all members of the three appellate courts hail from just 15 of Pennsylvania's 67 counties. Given the low-profile nature of such races, populous Allegheny County and Philadelphia send a disproportionate number of jurists to those benches. The idea of establishing judicial districts, similar to congressional and state legislative districts, has been floating around the Capitol for some time. The concept is popular at the grassroots. A recent Keystone Business Climate Survey of the state's business owners and chief executive officers found 58% favor the by-district election of appellate court justices and judges. It is disingenuous for those arguing that voters have somehow been shortchanged by the current method of drawing congressional and legislative district lines to suggest that they would not be better represented if appellate court jurists likewise were selected to give voters equal representation. The mystique that formerly surrounded the judicial branch as being fair and above the partisan squabbling that surrounds the legislative and executive branches has evaporated. Justices have resigned in scandal. Common Pleas court judges have gone off to jail for taking kickbacks. Most recently, the Supreme Court shed any pretense of nonpartisanship by re-gerrymandering the state's congressional districts. The issue of how redistricting is accomplished was raised here in Penns Woods as part of an effort by National Democrats to change the congressional playing field. Unable to effectively compete for a majority in the U.S. House of Representatives, they set about challenging districting maps in key states, including Pennsylvania. That plan has been highly successful. Democrats captured control of the state Supreme Court in 2015 after pouring millions of dollars, mostly from labor unions, into what are typically low-profile races. The GOP was caught napping, and partisan control of the high court flipped. Then Democrat front groups like Fair Districts PA began agitating for early redistricting. Suits were filed, the Supreme Court ruled in their favor, re-gerrymandered the districts, and new congressional maps were put into place. The next step in their master plan is to change the redistricting process. For decades, congressional redistricting has been done by the state legislature, with the final product taking the form of a bill that must pass both houses and be signed into law by the governor. That is what occurred after the 2010 census, at the time with bipartisan support and Supreme Court approval. In response to this, the state Senate has been considering a plan that would supposedly allow more citizen input into the process. It all sounds like mom and apple pie, except the goal of the so-called reformers is to capture control of the redistricting that will occur after the upcoming 2020 census. With the GOP holding a two-thirds majority in the state Senate and an historic high majority in the state House, it is clear which party would have the upper hand in the 2021 redistricting process if nothing changes. That doesn't fit the Democratic playbook, so the push for changing the process has gained steam. That the effort is nothing more than naked partisanship was revealed when reform proponents ramped up opposition to a plan by GOP senators to put into effect the by-district election of appellate court judges and justices. Some see it as payback for the Supreme Court's re-gerrymandering of congressional districts, and it may be, but that doesn't change the fact that it is a very good idea. In recent months, Pennsylvanians have witnessed the raw abuse of power by the judicial branch. That we should all have equal representation on the statewide courts is a matter of fairness. But fairness is not what the proponents of redistricting reform are seeking. They are seeking partisan advantage. Regardless of how the battle over how district lines are drawn plays out, the effort to change from a statewide to by-district election of appellate court judges and justices has merit. It is time for all Pennsylvanians to have equal representation in the judicial branch of government. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including our newest affiliate, WFRM-AM, in Cowdersport, Pennsylvania. Welcome to our new listeners in the Cowdersport area. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.